Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Life on the front lines requires you to step up your game. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Mattson, CardoMax has designed just the right supplements for you and is offering Drinking Bros an exclusive offer. Buy one, get one free on your first order. Go to CardoMax.com and use the promo code DB. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max. Welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. We try to stay on top of the trends. We try to stay topical. And as always, D'Anthony, we try to bring our listeners the hottest, pun intended, news stories of, well, the weeks and the months and everything else in between, right?
Right.
We're a topical show. We keep on top of everything. Today's special guest is Richard Montañez, who has created a lot of controversy recently for claiming to be the inventor of the Flamin' Hot Cheetos, which is, I feel like, America's favorite. Richard, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You actually have a book coming out about this, or it might currently be out already, where a reporter spent an entire year with you doing research on the Flamin' Hot Cheetos and how you came up with the recipe?
My book comes out Tuesday, and I worked with another writer who helped me put it together for a while. But it's been, I had years and years of notes. Mm-hmm. I just felt it was time. And the book is basically... I know a lot of people talk about Hot Cheetos, but, you know, they leave out the fact that I've created other products. And the book is mainly about overcoming obstacles, you know, and even though things happen to you, not to become bitter, but to become better. So the book is for anyone who's looking for inspiration, for hope, to achieve the impossible. And I really feel that... I've achieved that in my own personal life.
All right. Well, when did this happen? What year was it? When did you invent Hot Cheetos, and what made you think of it?
Well, it goes way back now. If you see in my book, when I got the job at Frito-Lay, it was the biggest thing in my life. And the job was a janitor, but it was a union job. It paid benefits. And I felt I made it, you know, coming from, you know, the fields. I mean, I worked at a car wash. I killed chickens for a living. I was a gardener. You know, I've never had health insurance in my life till I started working at Frito-Lay. So it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And I just thought, you know what? I can't blow this. You know, I'm finally, you know, I caught a break. I'm going to be somebody, you know. And people said, Richard, you're just a janitor. Calm down. And I always tell people there's no such thing as just a janitor when you believe in your heart that you're going to be the best. No such thing as just a waiter, a bus driver, or anything, you know. And I think people tend to, you know, label those who have those kind of jobs as it's not anything. There's no shame in that. So I got the job at Frito-Lay, and I'm going way back. Mm-hmm. 1977, you know. Oh. And it was pretty...
Well, you don't look that old. No offense. I thought you were a little bit
Yeah, you look like a younger dude.
That's good.
Oh, man, you guys are salespeople, huh?
I'm an asshole and a sociopath, so you're definitely not getting a sales pitch from me.
Yeah, no.
I've got a gun on the table right now. I'm just saying, you didn't look... I didn't expect you to say 77.
It looked like you were born in 77, not working at Frito-Lay.
You were born in 77.
No, 93, not 93. 97, I think, somewhere in there. No. I'm a young man, but that doesn't matter, Richard. The point is, you started at Frito-Lay in the 70s, and you did start off as a janitor, right?
Yeah. And you know, I'm going to tell you this story. So my neighbor, I'm working at a car wash, and one of my friends, you know, says, hey, they're hiring at Frito-Lay. And this is the truth. You know, I think people need to grasp this. You know, coming from a labor camp, you know, killing chickens, car wash, every, you know, minimum wage job. And here's an opportunity to work at a big name factory. It was almost like a dream. And I remember, I thought, oh my God, if I could get that job. So I went and got an application. And the truth is, you know, I could barely read and write. Now, I didn't stay there. Okay. People think, well, the guy could barely read and write. You know, I didn't stay there. You know, I've well educated myself. I've spoken at, you know, I've spoken at Harvard, Notre Dame, USC, UC, Pepperdine, some of the biggest universities in the country. So I didn't stay there. I always want to remind people that I didn't stay as a janitor. I'm self-educated, even though I don't have an education. So I got the application and I asked him if I could bring it back tomorrow. And he said, yeah. So I took it home and I had my wife, Judy, who's been my inspiration. You know, I have such respect for women because of my grandma, my mom, and my wife. So Judy fills it out. And it's pretty cool because I take it back to the next day and I'm really nervous. You know, I'm really nervous, you know, and I show it to him and he's looking at it. And then he just stares at me. He looks at it and he stares at me and he said, did you fill this out? And I said, yes. He goes, you have nice handwriting. I've been stealing Judy's credit ever since. So he said, you know, you get the job on the spot. You know, and I was really excited, and I thank God for many things in 77. One thing in particular is they didn't do background checks in those days. You got hired. Now, I tell people I didn't have nothing bad to hide, but just nothing good to show. You know, I had gotten in some trouble as a young man. So I was 18, and the plant was pretty close to the labor camp, which is incredible. So I wanted to reach my dad and my grandpa. And tell them that I, you know, the good news that I got the job. Cause I was making like $1.65 an hour and I went to $3.50 an hour, something like that. I don't remember, but it was over double my pay.
And what were you doing before? You were doing some kind of like seasonal migrant labor? What was it?
No, I was at a car wash.
Oh, you were at a car
wash. He was killing chickens.
Yeah. What? Yeah. So you moved from seasonal migrant labor and then to kind of odd jobs into a car wash, and then you got a job with one of the biggest companies in the country at the time, right?
Yeah, at Frito-Lay. Now, was that the one in Plano, Texas?
No. That's Plano, Texas is headquarters. This was in Rancho Cucamonga, Southern California.
Oh, shit. You know Rancho? Oh,
yeah. We know Rancho. Oh, yeah. Of course. From Los Angeles. There we go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Ontario Airport, that was the labor camp.
Yeah,
I don't know if
real.
You guys know this, but here's some good history for you. Back in the 30s, Segundo Guasti came from Italy, and he created the wine industry in Southern California. And where I lived, it was actually the world's biggest wine producing area in the country. It was bigger than Napa Valley. But what happened in the early 70s, the wine growers got more selling their land to developers than they did producing wine. Now, if you're ever in the area, you can still see some of the skeletons of the wineries, and they're more like villas. They're replicas of, you know, what happened in Italy.
You know,
the guy was a good, I never met him, of course, but, you know, way before my time, but, you know, he built a school, he built a church, he built a grocery store. He tried to take care of his workers. So, but that's kind of the history on there.
And so when you get this job, you're excited to go tell all your relatives that you have it and everything else. What did you initially start off doing at Frito-Lay? It was the janitor position, right? In 77?
Yeah, I was a janitor. And when I told my grandfather, he said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm the janitor. And he said something to me that changed my life. And I believe it's the reason for my success today. He said, when you mop that floor, you make sure that it shines. And when people see it, they know that a Montañez mopped it. So I took that on. I was like, you know, I'm going to make this floor shine so people will ask, you know.
Right.
And I did, you know, I saw that it was pretty incredible, you know, even as a young man without a formal education or even the type of mentoring. You have to understand where we come from. You know, I didn't have a bank account till, you know, several years. I didn't know how to write a check. I didn't know how to do the basic things that, you know, most people would probably take for granted. My dad and my grandpa were my mentors, but they mentored me in how to work hard and sweat. And that was it. So I saw that, you know, I was cleaning the bathrooms, the break rooms, and the manager's office. And I saw that I had an influence. People were smiling. People were starting to ask, you know, hey, who cleaned the restroom? It smells so good. And I realized that I could influence people without even saying a word, strictly just by my work ethic. So,
yeah, it's hard for people to, it's really hard for people just to sit around and do nothing when somebody else is busting their ass, honestly. Like, you set the tone that way. We talk about that all the time.
I literally just did a show earlier about work ethic and how much it is missing in today's society because they don't take pride in their work.
No,
no matter what it is, like you were saying, your father was saying, make sure that is the best looking floor they've ever seen. Like, no matter what job you have.
Like, you're above some kind of work.
Yes.
Like, just shut the fuck up and do your job, man.
And take pride in it.
Everybody says, like, dress for the job you want, but act, and then they act like, well, I mean, I should be doing something else, so I'm not going to put any effort into this. Like, you think you're going to get promoted, get somewhere in life by half-assing the job you have because you feel like you're above it? Like, get the fuck out of here, man.
Yeah.
That is a ridiculous way to go through life. And it is a way, that's how losers think, frankly.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's how, it's just like you expect shit for free. No, you work.
You work and people see your work. Like in your case, Richard. So you were mopping floors?
I try to teach that in the university. I said, you know, don't quit every single job that you get. Stay there and, you know, produce something and, you know, make something happen. You know, there's I think there's a lot of emphasis on, if you're not happy, you know, quit your job. I don't come from that generation. I come from a generation where we work to eat. Yeah. It had nothing to do with being happy. You know that I had keep in mind, I'm old school, so all my bosses were old school. Mm. And I remember one time when I wasn't happy, I went to my manager, he's a director, and I said, you know, I'm not happy here. And he said this to me. He looked straight at me and he said, you know what, Richard, if my job was to make you happy, instead of giving you a paycheck, I'd give you Disneyland tickets. And you know that how rude that was, but it woke me up.
Yeah.
And if I finally realized that I had to make myself happy. Mm. No job, you know, whatever, do that. And today, you know, I'm fortunate that, you know, I counsel and mentor some of the top CEOs in the world. And I've told them a couple of times, you've got to stop saying that you love your employees, because everything that you do is the opposite. Mm. I said, you don't owe them your love. You owe them respect. You owe them a good wage. You owe them a good safety. You know, concentrate on those things, you know, because when you say you love your employees, I mean, think about it. Love is a very powerful word. Mm-hmm. And then you find yourself laying half of them off. You know, so what happens is, you know, the workforce tends to, well, yeah, my company loves me, but keep that in perspective. I've said this myself. You're going to love your company more than it will ever love you. Keep that in perspective, you know? So, anyway, you know, I got the job and I was, you know, mopping and I was loving it, you know, and then my life came to a halt. My manager called me up and he said, it was the 30-day probation period. And it was a 2-week mark. And he said, I'm going to have to let you go. Oh man. I just thought, how could I blow the only break? And I believe me, where I come from, it was the only break. I come from the hood, you know, I come from the ghetto, and people, you know, say there's choices there. Yeah, but the choices aren't very good. So I said, man, I blew the one thing. And I asked him, what happened? You know, what did I do? And he says, well, you showed no initiative. You know, that I didn't know what that word meant. You know, English, I'm still trying to, you know, understand the English language. But I went home and Judy, my wife, you know, pretty intelligent, you know, pulled out the dictionary. We word the word initiative, and it broke me. You know, it's, you know, somebody who doesn't show this, and I'm like, oh my God, okay, I got it. So I went back and I said, hey, just, you know, let me have the rest of these 2 weeks, and I'll show you. I'll be the most initiative person you have. And sure enough, that's what happened. See, what he saw was, where I showed no initiative, here's what I was doing, is I was mopping and I was doing my duties in 4 hours. So I didn't know what to do for the next 4 hours. So I would start and mop it all over again. You know, so the next day when I started with my new initiative, I finished my job and then I started helping other people. I started taking other people's trash out. I started helping the I wasn't an operator. The people that were running the Doritos, the Cheetos, and the Fritos, I started taking their trash out. And so they started giving me they started telling my manager, hey, thanks for letting us use Richard. And he's like, I don't let you use Richard. Well, he took all our trash out. So the 2 weeks went by and he said, you're hired. But that terrible moment helped define who I was. My grandpa, make it shine. And then this manager, show no initiative, helped define, you know, who I was. Because from then on, I learned every piece of equipment in that plant, even though it wasn't my job. I could run anything, even though I was still the janitor.
Now, how long was it until the next jump, until the next leap up the corporate ladder for you from being a janitor? What was the next job after that that they said, hey, Richard, you've done a great job. You've shown some initiative. We would like to move you up to this position. What was that?
Well, there was no they'd like to move me up to any position, because remember, this is a union job. Mm-hmm. Or a union facility. So you had to bid for any openings. So it was a few years before I was, you know, I acquired some seniority where I could bid. But in the meantime, before I officially had those jobs, I was running the Dorito line, because I had learned how to do it. I was running the Cheeto line because I knew. So whenever somebody had called out sick, they would say, well, let Richard run it because he knows how. So it was a pretty good gig for me. You know, I was getting a lot of respect. And here's where I always say, you know, people say you get promoted by who you know. That's not true. You get promoted by who knows you. And I saw that people were knowing me. Why? Because the floor shined. I could ride. I could, you know, run every piece of equipment there. So it took me probably about 4 years on that graveyard shift to move up to my first official, I don't want to call it a promotion because I was still on the clock. Mm-hmm. But I went from there, and I went to what is called the GU, General Utility. Mm. And that was kind of like the guy that just did everything. You know, he would give operators breaks. You know, I couldn't run the line, you know, because of the union, but I could give them breaks. You know, and then I think my big break came is when I did sign a bid, because that's what they were called, bids, you know, for a Dorito line. Mm-hmm. And I filled that out, you know, and so I was a Dorito, and I became a Dorito specialist. You know, if you get that makes sense, you know, I was a
specialist. Flavor profile, all that stuff. Like, you were the Dorito guy.
Yeah, I'd make Doritos. I could, you know, I could. And then the thing that was pretty cool about that role was Doritos, you know, or any type of Frito-Lay product, it's like a science. Mm-hmm. You know, you think it's just like, oh, just a, it's not. It's very complicated.
No, even for a fast food restaurant, there are test kitchens all over the Midwest. You've probably been to, there's some, a bunch in Ohio, near Ohio State.
Yes.
Like when Wendy's or somebody comes out with a new burger or whatever the fuck, they send it there first. And
correct.
Then they release it into smaller markets. Rancho is one of those. Yep. For Frito-Lays, right? They were releasing test market stuff there, like back in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there was a ton of labor out there after the Cesar Chavez movement. Mm-hmm. Migrant labor was there to stay, right?
Yep.
And it was affordable. It was a good way to fucking get your products out.
Yeah.
So made sense. Yeah,
you're correct. There was a lot of labor there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why a lot of companies started coming out there.
So. It's too bad they moved the wine out, though. I mean, if you look up in, like, Modesto, that's where E&J Gallo is. That is the largest producer of wine on earth, that company, E&J Gallo. It's in Modesto, right?
And then
Stockton, somewhere around there.
Segundo, what he was talking about earlier.
Yeah, they all left.
I know, but half the streets and everything in L.A. is still Segundo when you're there, which is pretty funny. Gun to head, favorite Dorito flavor. This is always a source of contention amongst our audience. Who do you got, Richard? Nobody knows that Doritos better than you. Who do you got?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
Really? You don't have a favorite flavor?
Yeah, I mean, well, of course, it's got to be Flamin' Hot.
Mm. No. But for Doritos themselves, those are the ones.
Yeah, and they never put Flamin' Hot on Doritos, although they do have the sweet chili.
They've got the spicy one out now.
Yeah, the spicy.
I've got to go Gun to Head Cool Ranch.
I'm a regular Doritos guy with salsa.
Okay.
It's a good combo. Nobody ever thinks of that for some reason.
No,
it's a really good combo.
And it is a really good combo. I got to go Cool Ranch, though. But
you know, there years ago, Frito-Lay did a study, and men preferred Cool Ranch over Nacho, and women preferred Nacho over Cool Ranch.
I guess I'm a woman then. I need to start using the other bathroom. You guys, give me one of those placards.
Let's go genderless.
Yeah.
Let's go genderless. So how do you end up creating the Flamin' Hot Cheetos then? Because is it the initiative where it was like, all right, great. I know the inside and outside of everything that goes on at Fritos. What's the next big possible thing I can do to show initiative? Was that the thought process behind this?
That's exactly the thought process. The initiative was burned in me. And, you know, there's some things that happened that, you know, you're talking a lifetime. You know, I spent 42 years there, you know, and that's a lifetime, you know, so things happen. So, you know, I had this line and then, you know, there was a layoff and I got bumped back to a GU. You know, the janitor role and, but I could still run everything. So, they still would let me, you know, when somebody would go on vacation, I could do this and do that. And then, one day, you know, I'd say this, you know, when I'm teaching, I say, all you need is one revelation to create a revolution. And what is a revelation? A revelation is, you know, here's what people need to understand. Revelation is something that was always there, but it's been revealed or unveiled to you. So Frito-Lay's not doing too good. They're cutting our shifts. We're worried about getting laid off. You know, I got bumped back to graveyard, you know, but I still had a job and we were working like three shifts, a week. And, you know, by this time I had, you know, I had a family, you know, a house payment. I was concerned. I was worried, you know, I didn't remember. I'm not going to go anywhere. No one's going to hire me. So a new CEO comes into town by the name of Roger Enrico, and he sends out a video, and that's the communication of the day. There's no email. It's either a fax or a video.
Wait, how did they send out video? This is what year is this?
Yeah, what year is this?
This is, I think it's 90. It's early 90s.
Okay. 90s, okay. You know? All right.
But let me back up. He himself had been sending videos out in the late 80s when he was, because remember, he was CEO of Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
That visionary was, he was leading Pepsi at the age of 37. So yeah. I was watching his videos because he was a great motivational speaker. And he was, you know, so when he did the Frito thing, it was the early 90s, and he was pretty honest. You know, we'd never heard that. And it was kind of scary because he shut down the plants globally. And we thought, if you're in operation, you never shut the plant down for anything.
Sure.
And they shut it down. You know, we got into the, you know, the room and they set up the, you know, the screens or whatever, and they put it on. Here's this young man, very charismatic. And he says, hey, Frito-Lay's in trouble. We're losing market share. I didn't even know what market share was. Losing market share. Competitors have met our quality. You know, we can't continue to raise prices anymore. Company's in trouble. I can't do it myself. My executives, I need you. And this is what he said. Another life-changing moment for me. He said, I'm empowering you to act like an owner. I'm giving you permission to act like an owner. So, you know, there's a bunch of, you know, people in the room and everyone's, you know, typical corporate stuff, you know, mm-hmm. Richard, he's not talking to you, he's not talking to us. But I remember that initiative killed me. I'm like, you know, I'm doing something I've done my whole life. I'm breaking rank. Look, guy, you do whatever you want. Do you just realize that the CEO himself just said that we could all act like an owner? When is the janitor going to get an opportunity to act like an owner? Like, come on, guys, get right with it. I was just like, you know, and I was like, nah, you know, I'm just going to take this for myself. You know, whatever they say, I don't care. You know, and I went home and I told Judy, you know, hey, this new CEO said act like an owner. She said, well, act like an owner.
That's really good advice from him, by the way. One of my buddies, runs, he has an LLC, and what he does is he starts mostly medical device startup companies in the Bay Area in mm-hmm. Silicon Valley. And he has his employee handbook only has one page, and it just says, one sentence, act like an owner. That's
yeah.
all it says.
Yeah, yeah.
like make decisions about how you spend money, about how you represent the product, about how you invest in the product, as if you were an owner of the company. And the, I suppose the implied task there is to get involved in the success of the company in a real way. But you have to, as an owner, as the actual owner of the company, if you ask people to do that, you damn sure better be willing to peel off some points.
Oh yeah.
When they come up with an idea that makes sense, right? You can't, don't tell people to act like an owner and then treat them like a fucking employee.
Yeah.
Because that's not how it works.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? That is such a strong point that people don't understand. You know, that's right. We're going to try to bring these out in the movie. I tried to bring it out in the book, exactly what you said. Because keep in mind, you know, I'm talking my generation, you know, your parents' generation. When we went to work, we were this is what it was like. Corporate America was a command and control. What is a command and control? I didn't hire you to think. I hired you to do what I tell you to do. So here comes Roger and Rico, like, you know, just like your friend, empowering everyone with a vision way ahead of his time. You know, act like an owner. So you have to understand this. And here's where it's really hard for people to understand. That had never been done before. So all the managers, all the middle managers within, you know, the PepsiCo organization, you know, the thousands and thousands of them, they're thinking, oh, wait a minute, what am I going to do? You know, what's my role now? Their roles were no longer to manage. Their roles were, this is what we called them. Roger changed their title from managers to resources. So now you are Richard's resource. When Richard needs help, he's going to come to you. So many of these, you know, men and women couldn't make the transition from a command and control to an empowered one, because it's exactly like what you said. You can't empower anybody, then all of a sudden say, oh, wait a minute, I was just kidding. You've gone too far.
Right.
No. So anyways, that's, you know, that's something that, you know, many people fail to understand because no one knows what command and control is.
Right. I mean, sure. It's even today, major companies fail to understand that. Now, Silicon Valley.
There you go.
Yeah. Silicon Valley made a big push. I guess Google really started it in the mid 2000s, where they started offering free childcare on site, food, et cetera, et cetera. They actually got the idea from the guy that owns Fidelity Insurance.
Right.
What's his name? Fuck. He owns the Golden Knights too.
Bob
something, I think.
Yeah. Look up who owns the Golden Knights, Vegas Golden Knights. Bob, but
He's got a Foley, Bill Foley, that's his name. Yeah. Yeah. So he started this when he bought Fidelity Insurance back in the 70s or 80s. He started this thing where he helped people get childcare, and he would bring in a barber to give people haircuts and a guy to wash people's cars during the day. So that's one less thing that you got to worry about. He also put every single employee in the company on track to earn at least some kind of points in the company. He kind of revolutionized blocking off 10% of your company and making that a vested stock portfolio for all your employees, like a group stock portfolio. And it's worked. And you see it with the difference between Walmart and Target. Not that I'm an apologist for either one of these, but Walmart pays its employees about, I think, 40% more than Target pays their employees about 40% more than Walmart does. They also get promoted quicker.
Yeah.
And Target makes 6 times more per employee than Walmart does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a coincidence. Obviously, people who feel invested in shit will work harder.
Oh yeah.
It's basic human psychology, man.
Yeah.
That was my life. I felt exactly what you said, you know, I felt that they were making an investment in me. And again, I'm talking about me. You know, I don't have nothing to, I don't have nowhere to go. I got nothing going on, you know? So how am I going to waste an opportunity when, you know, he invested in me? So, you know, Judy said, act like owner. I didn't really know what that meant. So I started, you know, a journey. I went to the sales office and I found me a sales guy. And I asked this guy, hey, can I go with you on my day off? I'll load your truck. I go, I just want you to teach me. You don't have. He looked at me like, man, you can come on your vacation, free labor. Yeah. So he said, meet me at 5 o'clock in the morning. So on my day off, I met him at 5 o'clock in the morning, and he taught me he taught me how to pull an order so that we could maximize the space in the truck, get as much product on there, and then he taught me how to run a route so that we could maximize our time and our fuel. This guy was really good. You know, they don't just load the truck and then, you know, go anyway. They, you know, trying to, you know, keep the miles down and the gas down and the time down. And we got to the store. He taught me how to merchandise. You know, the product's not there. The product, you know, we call it a schematic. You know, it's there for a reason. You know, it's in front and the bottom on top. And so he taught me all that and how to rotate product, make sure you pull the old cold. You know, you never want to see an old cold there. That's the one thing I can brag about Frito-Lay. You're not going to get a stale chip. You know, so, you know, we would pull it out, and then I looked across from the racks. As I said earlier, all you need is one revelation to create a revolution. And there it was. I saw it. My revelation, it was going to change my life and certainly my company's life. And I looked at him, he couldn't see it. And you know why he couldn't see it? Because he became an expert. So I tell people, don't become such an expert that you can't see things anymore. You know, I led large teams before I retired. I mean, really large teams. And I always told my team, I said, bring me ideas no one else can see. Tap into the unseen and let's bring it into the scene and make it a reality. So the question is, what did you see?
Yeah.
I saw the spice rack. I saw the chili rack. I saw people buying spices. And then I looked at, remember, this is a long time ago. I looked at our portfolio, you know, the gondolas, and I looked, and here's what I had. I had Lay's, Ruffles, Fritos, Lay's, Ruffles, Fritos, maybe sour cream. And then I thought about it. Where's all the, you know, spicy products?
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't just for Latinos. It was beyond that. I mean, you know, most people love, you know, Cajuns love spices, African American loves Asians. It's just all, you know, everybody loves spices.
You said everybody but white people.
But white people, yeah. White people don't.
But you're right. I mean, especially in the
we're coming around though.
The northern Midwest, there's a phrase up there called spicy ketchup, and they're referring to just ketchup.
Yeah.
Norwegian people, they can't handle it. I may be lily white here, but I like the heat.
I said I did an episode maybe, I don't know, 400 or 500 ago when I was talking about this, and with spicy things in culture, right? I feel like because the United States has such an influx of Hispanics and the Hispanic community, their food and their culture is integrating into our society. It has made a lot more things spicy. You're seeing a lot more things that are becoming spicy.
Yeah, Takis. Dotch just came out with the spicy Cheeto thing.
100%. But it's also because of that, it is also changing the way like white people eat, the ones that you left out there, Richard, but it's because we've been exposed to it for the first time, a lot of it, but we also love it, and it's grown and grown and grown super, super fast. I feel like if you don't have some form of spicy thing in whatever you're doing, you're
like this.
Yeah, 100%. Like Joe Rogan's.
Yeah, one of our sponsors is Killcliff.com. It's a CBD company and an energy drink company and started by Navy SEALs. Joe Rogan is part owner in it, and here's one of his signature flavor. It's pineapple and jalapeno.
And spicy, yeah, and jalapeno.
Like, you can't get away with not having something spicy at this point.
Correct.
I'm gonna have to try that.
It's really good, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Cheeto Man, you know advertising well. We got some sponsors who pay for this shit wagon to be on the air. First and foremost, ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. Two free pillows with a mattress. That's the deal. Go and get it. I promise you, the pillows are just as good as the goddamn mattress. I promise you this. I would not lie to you about this. Some say the pillows are their favorite. Give it a go. You tell me what you think. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today. And get a little bit of ghost bed in your life, baby. Sheets, pillows, adjustable bases. As always, they get a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest there. And if you have decent credit. Now, don't come at me if you got a 558 or something like that. Decent credits, no interest, okay? Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today, and you can bundle all those deals together with a 36-month pay-as-you-go program, and you're good to go. Next up, we got boxofawesome.com. This summer, Bespoke Post is here to take your adventures to the next level with a new lineup of must-have Box of Awesome collections. These are the Bespoke Post partners. They partner with small businesses and emerging brands to bring you the most unique goods every month. I always say it's like getting a little miniature Super Bowl game in my mailbox every single month because I never know what it's going to be. I got a full fajita set last month that encompasses the tortillas and everything. That little case, I got all of that, some taco holders. You never know what you're going to get. One time I get a DOP kit. Another time I get a travel bag. I've gotten a buck knife. I've gotten a whiskey decanter. I've gotten a hatchet. Love these guys. Every month is a mystery, and it's amazing. All you got to do is take a little quiz on boxofawesome.com, and that way it'll help pick out what kind of man you are in this life and what type of Box of Awesome is right for you. They release new boxes every month across a ton of different categories. It's free to sign up, and you can skip a month or cancel anytime. Each box only costs $45. That's it. That's it. But it's got over like 70, 100 bucks worth of gear in it. It's amazing, man. I've been signed up for this for, shit, man, a year and a half now. I love it, man. Every time it shows up, it's rad, and it's just stuff you would never buy yourself as a dude that you need in this life if you want to get laid. Get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter the code DRINKINGBROS at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, promo code DRINKINGBROS for 20% off your first box. Last but not least, mybookie.com. Promo code DRINKINGBROS will double your deposits at mybookie.com. We're in it. We're in the stink of it. NBA playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs, football. It's right around the corner here. We're about 8 weeks away from getting our dicks up in a salute towards our freedom. And that's football. Freedom is our football. At least it is for me. It's the only thing I really care about in this world. This cold, cold, dark earth. But all of my bets are amazing. Here's one, because this show is airing on Sunday. We'll find out if it came to fruition on Drinking Bros Sports, which if you're not subscribed, you need to go be subscribed to. Not only the audio feed, but the video feed as well on YouTube. I said Hawks in six against the 76ers. Now, that game about to tip off here. About 2 hours. Fake Dan says otherwise. He's going to get fucking rocked tonight. This is the end of Philly's season.
No. Game seven is actually going to be tonight.
No.
Sunday.
No. No.
When this airs.
Nope. No, it won't. This is Friday right now. This game is already over. I've already bet it. I've already bet it on mybookie.com. Promo code DRINKINGBROS doubles your deposit. Get in there. Get wet. Get fast and furious with us. Listen to the sports show and get all of our picks. And don't forget to rate the show a 5-star and leave a quick review. We need it. We've been on the top of the charts for 7 years. Damn, this will be 7 years now. Coming up here soon. So, dude, keep us up there on iTunes and all that stuff. Just give us a 5-star and a quick review. Thank you, Cheeto, man. Did you go home to your wife and just say, all right, we need to come up with a recipe? I mean, was she a cook? Were you a cook?
No, I'm not a cook. She's a wonderful, authentic cook from recipes from, you know, great-great-grandma, you know, my grandma, her mom, you know, so she, you know, she loved to cook, and, you know, she spent time with my mom, and she spent time with my grandma, and my grandma was using her grandma's recipe, so these were, you know, over 100-year-old recipes, so she was good at it. But, you know, the other part that I want to make sure is that, you know, I had a hidden agenda, you know, creating these products. And it's kind of like what you guys had mentioned, you know, growing up where I grew up, a little bit off the subject, but I think it'll be interesting. You know, growing up where I grew up is, when I started to make white friends, I brought a friend over. I remember his name was Mark. He was a big kid, you know, football player, you know, and we were only 10 years old. He's already huge. And he came over, and my mom, you know, cooked him some Mexican food, and he loved it. And but for me, in those days, it was a win. It was a win because my whole family, my uncle's like, Richard has a white friend. He's being accepted. You know, look, he's going to be okay because white people like him. And that's what it was like. You know, I think, and one of the reasons that I never get to share with, but I'm going to share with you guys, one of the reasons I created Hot Cheetos and all the other products that I created under the Frito-Lay brand was I felt that if white people could taste my product and my culture, they would see that our culture is a good culture. You know, it was always about that acceptance. Of course, I'm beyond that now, but it was always about that acceptance. You know, because here's how I look at when you look at racial discrimination, it comes in different forms and different levels. You know, some of it is strictly hatred, but some of it is just, you know, we can fix it just by educating.
It's ignorance. Yeah, most of it is ignorance.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, the first time I had sushi, I was like, I'm not going to try sushi. My grandkids said, come on, grandpa, you're going to have sushi. And I have it at least once a week now. So it was, you know, it was a form of discrimination, but I was educated and it came out. So anyway, I went home and I told Judy, I got it, Judy. We're going to put, now, remember I told you that, you know, I'm from the hood, you know, my leadership is learned from the streets. So is my wife. You know, we're you know, tell people, you know, we're pretty ghetto. We can handle our own, you know, we tried to change and I believe that we have, but I didn't learn my leadership at any university. I learned it on the streets. You know, I had, you know, my leadership was about survival. So I say, hey, Judy, we're going to, and she's like, okay, you know, she's that road dog. Let's do it, man. She goes, which chip? I go, I don't know. I really did not know. So here's how I got it is we went grocery shopping and we went to the neighborhood store. And the reason we went to the neighborhood store because we didn't have a bank account. So the guy there was a good guy, you know, neighborhood stores, man, they're community people. You know, mm-hmm. I love them. He'd cash my check and he'd let me buy groceries. So, you know, we bought groceries and we went outside and every weekend there was this young man with two kids and his wife, and he was selling corn on a cob on a stick, elotes, for a buck.
Mm, oh yeah.
You know, and you know, he put everything, whatever you wanted, but you know, what amazed me about this guy, you know, you have to learn to understand when certain people come into your life. So, you know, he inspired me because I looked at him and I'm like, doesn't he know he's just a street vendor? He's standing there like he has a 5-star restaurant. And that inspired me with his attitude, his smile, you know, and, you know, he greeted me and he said, hey, you know, you want one? I said, yeah, let me have two. You know, he's con todo, with everything. Yes, you know, pon todo, put everything on it. I bought two, one for me and my son. I took a bite. Then I took a second bite. And then you always got to remember the word revelation leads to a revolution. What is a revelation? Something that was always there. So the second bite, I looked at it and I thought, oh my God, that looks like a Cheeto. So I did what every entrepreneur, every great leader has ever said. I said the simple words, what if?
Yeah.
Every great leader at one time has got to say, what if I show up to that meeting? What if I do? So I said, what if I put chili on a Cheeto? So I went and told Judy, and you know, I said, like, Judy's that type of woman, man. She got my back. You know, she's going to go to town with me and whatever we got to do. She said, let's do it. She said, go to the plant and get some Cheetos with no cheese. So, you know, next day I went, I got a trash bag. I filled it up with, you know, Cheetos, they go on, it's called a slurry. They go on with Doritos. It's more like a dry seasoning,
mm-hmm.
but Cheetos, it's a slurry. They go on wet.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that either.
I go on wet too.
Yeah. Jen does it all
the time. So I brought some, you know, it's cornmeal. All it is cornmeal and it's popped into that form. So I brought a whole bunch home with no seasoning, put them in a trash bag and, you know, and by this time, when R&D would come to the facility, I would always stick my nose, you know, through the window in the little laboratory. and see how they would do things. Mm. You know, these guys were, you know, scientists, 10 years, to get their degrees. And I'd poke my head in there and ask questions. And so I kind of knew, you know, ghetto style, how to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to the kitchen after a few batches, you know, we finally got it right. She used to work at Target Warehouse, and she took some to her work. And by the way, and we're talking about Walmart and Target, both of those CEOs are good friends of mine, Doug at Walmart and Brian at Target. Now, Brian used to be my boss. He used to work at PepsiCo. Mm. So he was so happy because Judy was a warehouse worker at Target. You know, so he said, like, yeah, Target had a role in creating Hot Cheetos. So that day we come back and Judy says, hey, everybody at Target liked it. At Frito-Lay, my plan, everybody said, this is great. And everybody said, you need to call the CEO. And Judy said, all my friends said you have to call the CEO. So she said, call the CEO, you know.
I hate to interrupt you, but at this point, do you have them in a bag and they're done? So when you had the spice and the flavoring to everything you wanted, did you have them ready to give to the CEO, or was it just an idea at that point?
No, I had some in bag, but I got them ready for the CEO a little while later. But the very beginning, I had them. I usually have some right here in front of me.
I thought he was getting ready to do a magic trick. Like he was going,
I usually have some. Oh,
yeah, just well, pull it out of his ear or something.
There it is.
Not to say I'm disappointed. Nah, yeah,
but anyways, I had him. But I bought some industrial Ziploc bags. Not sandwich bags, but they were industrial. And that's how I first shared them. You know, like here, they're in here. You know, I wanted them to, you know, feel like a bag. So remember, this was a command and control, you know. You don't do what I'm about to do. So I went and found the corporate directory, and it was just the phone book, you know, of the day. Because again, there's no email.
Sure.
You know, so you could find anybody in your division, you know, Kansas or whatever. Well, of course, the very one was the CEO. So I remember I asked the secretary if I could use it, and she said no. this is not for personal use, because after all, you know,
probably worried about losing your job too, you know?
Yeah, it's got to be personal. And I said, I'm going to call the CEO. And she said, go ahead, use mine. Now I look back, she was gaining an audience because she felt, hey, Rich is going to get fired on the spot, guys, come and watch this. And so I called Mr. Enrico up, and so I always say, you know, I always have to refer back to, and I will for the rest of my life, to the leadership of a woman. I believe it is so special. I will take the leadership of a woman any day. My grandma, my mom, and my wife, and now Roger's executive assistant. She was just that, an executive assistant. So I told her, could I talk to Mr. Enrico? And, you know, the understanding in corporate America, command and control, that only a division president would call the CEO. I mean, a vice president wouldn't even do that. Even today, you don't do that. So she's kind of like, well, I don't recognize the name. What area do you run? And I said, I'm in California. She said, oh, you're the president of California. I said, no, I work in Southern California. You're the VP of SoCal. I said, no, I work in the plant. She goes, oh, okay. You're the vice president of operations. I said, no, I work inside the plant. Plant manager? No. She said, what are you? And I said, I'm the GU, the janitor. And she's like, what's this call about? And I said, I saw Roger's video and he said, act like an owner. And I started to do all this stuff. And I put all these together. And I think I have this great idea. You know, nobody, you know, we're not doing anything to sell to people that, you know, love spicy chips. And I think, you know, it would just work. And I wanted to share with him. And she said, hang on, Richard. And I love the fact that she called me Richard. Hang on, Richard. So it took a couple of minutes. So here's what I'm thinking in my mind. It took her 2 minutes. And I know she's telling Roger, you need to take this call. This guy has something. This is what you've been waiting for. You've asked people to be empowered. Here's a guy you need to take. You know, the way a secretary
sure,
would, right?
Sure, sure, yeah. So,
and because when he got on the phone, guys, he was so excited. He goes, Richard, I hear you got an idea for me. Man, that's wonderful. And I began, I said, yeah, I saw your video and I did this. And you know, guys, I was just talking from my heart. I've never presented or done anything like that. I just like me and you talking right now, you know, let's get a beer and, you know, just have conversation, you know, no, nothing to be nervous about, just whatever. And
sure.
Then he said, I'll be there in 2 weeks. So I hung up the phone. I was like, I was floating. I did it. I've never done anything like that in my life. And I did it. He's coming to see me. But I did one thing that was wrong that nobody was ready for. I broke protocol. You know, at the time I couldn't even spell the word protocol, let alone what it meant.
Sure.
So the calls went into action. The president was notified, the West Division, you know, every senior vice president all the way down to my plant manager. And the question was the same. Who's this Richard guy? Who let the janitor call the CEO? So by this time, the plant manager, it's been about 20 minutes. I don't know, half hour. I don't remember, a long time ago. And he came out and he just ripped me apart. Now, keep in mind, this is command and control. This was normal. You know, you see the old movies where the boss is just cussing out the worker and you couldn't do it. That was pretty much, I mean, you can't do it today, you know, lawsuits and, you know, stress release. But back in those days, it was common. So it wasn't personal. You're like, who the F do you think you are? Do you realize everybody's coming? And he said, now I gotta get everything ready. I got to paint the place. You know, and then he said one thing that just gave me a heart attack. He said, you're doing the presentation. And I thought, I'm doing the presentation. I've never even done homework. So I go home and I tell Judy, and she can tell by the look of my face, like, what's wrong? I said, I'm going to get fired. She said, why? And I said, because you told me to call the CEO. Now he's coming to see me and I got to get a presentation. But listen here, guys, typical leadership of a woman. Here's what she tells me. Calm down. It's not that bad. We're going to go to the library and check out a book on how to develop a marketing strategy. So we went to the library. You know, we got like three books, and I copied three paragraphs from one book, put them on transparency. Then we made a 100 bags. And, you know, part of the, you know, what I did, you know, to the earlier question is I drew the graphics on the bag. And then when it came to seal it, you know, I didn't know how to seal it, but I always said, you know, ingenuity from the hood, innovation from the hood with the iron. I realized that at a certain temperature without melting it, I could melt it closed. So, you know, me and my family made 100 bags. And this is an actual, I don't know how good you can see it, but it's an actual picture of what it looked like. This is one of the originals that I drew.
It still looks like the same font. Like they're using the same font too to this day.
Yeah, you know, so.
And does the CEO end up flying out to see you within the 2 weeks?
Yes, he did. You know, he came out and he brought, you know, marketing folks, you know, whoever he brought. And in those days, even the people that he didn't bring, if the CEO was coming if you were within a 200 mile radius and you were an executive, you better be there. You know, the dog and pony show, right?
Sure.
The CEO's coming on, you better show your face and, you know, whatever. And so I don't know who was there, but so I went and bought my first tie for $3.50, you know, the Goodwill, and had my neighbor tie it into a knot the night before. So we make up 100 bags. I get my transparencies. I put on my tie, and I'm walking out that door, and Judy does three things for me. And these are three things that I'm going to do for the rest of my life. She inspired me, she encouraged me, and she reminded me. The Greeks created the word inspired. It simply means to breathe life into someone. The Greek created the word encouragement. It simply means to plant courage into somebody deep in being that they stand up and they're never the same again. And then she reminded me. So I'm walking out the door. She says, I don't know anybody who's smarter than you, Richard. I don't know anybody that has more courage than you. And she reminded me, she said, don't forget who you are. Don't forget with your father and your grandma. So I walked out that door thinking like, you know, and those are my principles that I've always used with my team. And just imagine when you inspire, encourage, and you remind somebody, remind them of their value to humanity, not the value that they have in their bank account. So I, you know, I leave and I get to the plant and, you know, it's pretty full. And here's the picture that you have to see. And I write about this in my book. And that's why I'm saying that I've learned my leadership from my situations is I know that in every room full of leaders, there's two types of leaders. And one of them is the leadership of a Pharaoh and the other one, leadership of a deliverer. What is the leadership of a Pharaoh? A Pharaoh is somebody who takes people captive to build everything in their image. Everything looks like them. Everything sounds like them. Everything is about them. Those are Pharaohs. The deliverer is that. Those are leaders that come into your life to help deliver you to be everything that you are intended to be. So in this room, it was a room full of Pharaohs. There was two deliverers. Now, use your imagination. I walk in and everybody's mad. Now you would wonder, why are they mad? Well, they're mad because they're wondering, why did the CEO drag us here to hear the uneducated Latino? What is he going to teach me about marketing? What is he going to teach me about sales? What is he going to teach me about creating new products? It's just, you know, it's just not right. It was, and they let me know, you know, no one was smiling. No one was greeting me, you know. So it was time. I got on stage and I don't know if you've ever, you guys are probably too young to have done a presentation on transparencies, but they can humble you. You know, I put it up there and it was upside down. I turned it around. It was still upside down. Finally got it. And, guess what? I was doing it. I had their attention. I was, again, just from my heart. That's all I knew. I didn't know anything else. And, you know, just remember, I had never done homework, let alone a presentation.
But you also have the product at this point, right? In the bags.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's trying the product. And I had, you know, what's pretty cool is I had, you know, because, you know, Pepsi is, you know, part of the family, right? So I had Pepsis for everyone. And, you know, people were like, man, this is hot, but it was hot, but good, hot, good, hot, good. And drinking. So I was winning them over by, you know, my initiative. I think people were starting to say, well, wait a minute. This guy isn't a dummy. You know, I thought this guy was a dummy, but, you know, if he is a dummy, he's a dummy with a lot of courage, you know? And so I was doing it and, you know, time went on and then I saw a hand go up. I knew what that meant, questions. And I literally turned my back to look the other way because I thought, I'm not taking no questions. You know, I'm thinking, you know, Judy, my wife, you know, she got me ready, but she didn't tell me to get ready for questions.
And she's not there to answer them for you.
Yeah, she's not there to answer, you know. So he called my name on. He was a young marketing executive. And he said, hey, Richard, that's pretty good. But I have a question. I said, oh, I'm sorry, sir. We don't have time for questions. And I really said that. We don't have time for questions. And so it's a simple one. It won't take long. And I'm like, okay. You know, he says, how much market share are we talking about? And I'm not afraid of a lot of things, but there are some things that I'm afraid of, you know, but no, I'm from the streets, you know, I can take it outside with anybody. I don't got a problem with that. But
yeah,
when it comes to certain things, you know, you guys know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What was your response
looking
to that?
Like a fool. Well, the first thing I thought in my mind was like, market share, we haven't read that chapter yet.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, there was a door that this is the truth, guys. There was a door that said exit. I said, you know, I shouldn't be up here. Who do I think I am? Nobody could blame me for just leaving. You know, I did my best. I made it this far. I don't know what market share is. As scared as I was, there was something inside of me that was greater than the fear that was outside of me. And let me tell you where I got this from, okay? You know, it's a little story. I'm a storyteller. And, you know, and I tell, you know, college students, sometimes you got to go revisit your past so that you can find your future. And back in my day, they brought in after-school reading programs, and one was for the kids that spoke Spanish, and the other one was for kids that spoke English. So I got into the line that I was told to get into every Tuesday. And one day I did something different. I broke ranks and I got into the white line, you know, and you should have heard my friends, Ricardo, estás loco, you're in the wrong line. Cause this is in the '60s. Okay. There's going to be a beating. The teachers in my trailer are going to beat me for going in this one, or the teachers in this trailer are going to beat me for being in there. But I looked at the top of the trailer. There was two beautiful blonde with blue eyes, gorgeous women. And I look at my friends and I tell them, they got cookies inside. I'm going to get us some cookies. So I got in line. I made it, and I was scared. And I thought, can they tell I'm not white? You know, I'm pretty dark, man. You know, my hair slicks back on its own. You know, and I got to the top. You know what those two white ladies did? They filled my pockets with cookies. You know, and you're wondering, what's the moral of that story? There's two parts. You know, but first of all, let me say that, you know, a lot of times when my wife catches me looking at blondes, I would tell them they gave me cookies when I was little.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, but
we all do
that. The first part of that story is I tell everyone, there's a cookie that's been baked for you. Your job is to get out of that line they told you to get into and get into the cookie line. How dare us tell a young person which line to stand in? It is their choice. I didn't have a choice. They said, Richard, this is your line, but there ain't no cookies in this line. Richard, this is your line, but it's the poverty line. I want to go over to the prosperity line. I don't want to be in the job line. I want to be in the career line. I always say this, the line is your choice. We need to tell every young person, get into the line that you want to get into. Don't let anybody pick your line. Don't let a test score pick which line you should be in. So that's the first part. Now, why did I break ranks? What drove me to it? And this is the antidote to fear. You know, you guys have this. You know, most people don't. Get a hold of this and you'll never be afraid again. What drove me to break ranks? I was hungry. Hunger is the antidote to fear. When you're hungry to start a podcast, fear will leave. When you're hungry to start a business, fear will leave. When you're hungry to run for a political office, fear will leave. Hunger is the antidote to fear. So let's get back to that question. How much market share are we talking about? I am so scared. I am so scared because I'm going to look ridiculous. But I've always said this. Many times greatness comes in a ridiculous form. If you're not willing to look ridiculous, you will never achieve your greatness. But I was hungry. I was hungry to change the legacy of the Montanez family. I was hungry to go from here. I was hungry to do something different. I was hungry to make my children proud. So I remember the gondolas, the racks, and how big they were. And I stuck out my hands. And with the most ridiculous smile, I said, this much market share. And I had my arms wide open. And I could hear the folks kind of whispering, like, oh my God, did he just say market share?
And what happened from then? Like, does the CEO go crazy? Do they carry you out of the factory? I mean, what happens in that moment?
They started chanting Rudy.
Here's what happened is, I don't realize how ridiculous that statement is till, you know, sometime later. But remember, my CEO, he's not a pharaoh. He's a deliverer. He stood up and said, ladies and gentlemen, do you realize that Richard just showed us how to go after that much market share? And he raised up. He came to my level and brought me up to his level by that statement. And everyone in the room kind of like, yeah, we can go and get that market share. So he just turned the whole room. He took my ridiculous statement and made me a legend in that company, because people would ask, are you that guy that's sitting? I go, that's me, you know. So that's kind of how Hot Cheetos got it's going. But then there was, you know, the things that I talk about in my book. See, I didn't have a problem with the highest level executive. It was middle managers that I had a problem with, or had a problem with me. You know, they were offended. They're like, now, you know, they've lost, you know, we're no longer command and control. So Enrico gave the green light. Go do this product. And for me, I was kind of pushed out of the side. Hey, thank you. But the good thing about it is Al Carey, who later became the CEO of Frito-Lay and the CEO of Pepsi, a day one saw something in me and took me by his side and started sending me all over the country or on the West to this, because he ran the West, to talk to the salespeople about empowerment. So I started telling the story before, you know, the product even came out.
Yeah, they moved you up the ranks all the way, and then you worked there until what, 2019 as director. You were working on Hispanic marketing at that point. And then you got out of there. I know the book is out, obviously, and people are going to challenge this story. I'm sure you're familiar with this. The Los Angeles Times, you know, recently published a year-long investigation. I guess one reporter spent an entire year of his life to try to figure out where the Flamin' Hots came from. And he's saying it was more than likely developed at the headquarters in Plano and not from your kitchen. What was your response to that?
Well, you know, when I saw that, we were pretty much in shock, you know, like a year to investigate hot Cheetos. But
everybody who was in the factory with you that day, when you presented it to everybody, could clearly vouch for your story, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, Al Carey, who's retired CEO, I mean, he wrote, but for some reason, you know, his quote was at the end of the story, is that without Richard Montanez, there would be no hot Cheetos. They talked to Roger Enrico's secretary, and she says, oh, I remember when Richard called. I remember that setting up that meeting. All the people that were around Enrico, oh, we remember it like it happened yesterday. So, you know, so there's plenty of information to support.
Yeah, and corroborate your story.
But back to now, you know, again, I think, you know, when you tell these stories without certain details, I think that's when people get lost. But there's just so many details to the story that it would take forever. But, you know, once we created our version, whatever, of course, there's no dispute. Of course, a company like McCormick would make it safe. That's ridiculous to think that, you know, it wouldn't. So I don't have a problem with that. Like, yeah, of course, you know, I'm not going to take Judy's, you know, it could be an ingredient there that makes everybody. And then you had to make it so, you know, Cheetos, you know, sells, you know, millions and millions of bags per day. You have to have the seasoning to support all that. So I don't dispute that. I think it's more how it was written. You know, I've never said, you know, oh, yeah, all that is Judy. You know, they didn't have Judy in the warehouse making all this seasoning.
Yeah.
Of course it had to be. You know, I knew that, you know, just by watching. We got to make it. That's the one thing that I take great pride in Frito-Lay. The safety, the product safety is no one can match it. The product safety, no one can match it. And I take great pride that, you know, they continued that. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with that, you know. But I know that there was a lot in the story that I just couldn't understand, you know. I don't really know. I'm still trying to figure some of those things out.
Yeah, and look, when you're successful at something, there's always going to be people that are going to try and tear you down, and that's unavoidable. What I love about your story in particular is the fact that you were able to take something so small, right? An idea that is so small and so easy, and make it huge for the entire world, something that nobody had ever thought of before, because I think that's the hardest, right? Everybody's searching for something that hasn't been done before, but at this point, it feels like almost everything has been done before. But it's taking a very small, simple idea and making it explode into the world and into the lexicon that I think is so fascinating to me, because it's like, oh yeah, after having Flamin' Hot Cheetos for years at this point, it's one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, why didn't we do this earlier? And it takes somebody like a janitor working inside the factory to come up with an idea to beat the system, to decide to have the balls to call the CEO and get something like this done. And I think that's the most fascinating part of this story. And I certainly look forward to reading your book here. It's Richard P. Montanez, and it's Flamin' Hot, The Incredible True Story of One Man's Rise from Janitor to Top Executive. We always end our show, Richard, with the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. I have a feeling it's going to be Judy.
Absolutely. Judy is, as I told you, I've learned so much from the leadership of a woman. And I say this, you know, it's a little funny, but it's true. I believe that when God created women, he was showing off because no one else can match the leadership of a woman. And she is my inspiration. She is my, she's my everything, you know. And you know, you said it right too. I want to thank you for saying that, you know, because you, what you said is what I've been trying to tell everybody. It was the concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never said I was the first person to say, put hot sauce on something. I didn't create hot sauce. I created the concept that you see today. You know, somebody could say, well, I said, put Tabasco sauce on potato chip. Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not taking anything away from anybody, but it's the concept, you know, and then I want this book and this movie to help unify. I'm an American. You know, I got to remind people I'm an American. You know, I didn't migrate, you know, I was born here. You know, I love this country. You know, this country's done great stuff for me, and I want to give back, and I want to unify all of us, you know, white, black, brown, you know, coming together, because, you know, we have a lot of work to do. And I think what happened with that story, I think it was just somebody that, you know, wanted to, you know, break this unity, but I'm not going to let that allow that to stop me. I'm going to help unify this country. I believe in every gender, every color, every race. I don't have a problem. And that's who I am. You know, I did it with Hot Cheetos, and food brings us together, right?
Sure.
You know, and I want to continue that process. So, it's been Judy.
Awesome. Awesome. One more question before I let you get out of here today. In the movie, who would you like to play yourself? Is there any Hollywood actor that you're a fan of that you were like, man, that would be a great Richard?
They have hired somebody already.
Do you know who it is?
Mm-hmm. It's a young man by the name of Jesse Garcia. And the one that's playing Judy, her name is Annie Gonzalez, beautiful woman. And she's got that. You know, Judy's part, the movie should be about her. You know, she's pretty bold. You know that the women in your life that are really, really bold, and, you know, she keeps me in check. You know, because you got to remember, I come from the streets, and I came from the hard streets, you know, and she kind of said, hey, Richard, we're not like that no more. We're decent people now.
And where's the movie airing at? Who picked this up?
Oh, say it again.
The movie. Who picked it up? Where is this airing now?
When people started hearing the story, we were approached by all of Hollywood, Paramount, MGM, everybody, major company. There was a bidding war for the rights to the story. So I got, you know, my producer, Devon Franklin, who was an employee with Wills. He was an intern with Will Smith, then he became an employee. And, you know, he worked on some of the biggest movies, The Pursuit of Happiness and all that. So I'm like, I got me the right producer. So we went and we met with everybody. It was so exciting. You know, these executives wanted to see if Richard and Judy were for real, you know, so I picked Fox Searchlight.
Gotcha.
I picked Fox Searchlight because they had a pretty good diversity plan. They had the, you know, they saw the vision, because I kept talking about unity. I said, I don't want to alienate anybody. I don't want to call anybody any bad names. I want to bring America needs something to rally around, to come together. The American dream still lives. I don't care what anybody said. You can kill my story all you want, but the American dream lives. So I went with them because they gave me more say so. And we start shooting at the end of this month, so
it'll be out
by next fall.
Isn't Eva Longoria directing this?
Yeah, she's directing it.
You want to bury the lead there, Richard? Like, I'd start with Eva Longoria is directing that. That's pretty incredible.
I'll tell you what. When Devon was, you know, casting the director, he had like 14 directors in line, and he's never had, you know, more than three. and when Eva presented, this is going to blow you guys away. I mean, you guys should have her on your show, man. When she presented to me and Judy, I thought I was talking to a chief marketing officer.
Yep.
She just blew me away. And she had my vision. See, this movie needs to be like a little bit of like La Bamba, and then make a transition to the Wolf of Wall Street.
So you're saying there's a lot of cocaine involved?
Yeah.
There was a lot of
cocaine.
You know, backstabbing and jealousy, and I had to maneuver that. And not being from corporate America, you know, that's what I'm saying. All you know, but boy, is she a genius?
Yep.
Well, with her presentation, man. But yeah,
so she's a very, very smart lady. She works her ass off too, by the way, man. I knew her back in the day. She works her ass off. And I'm looking at Jesse Garcia here. Massive resume, Sons of Anarchy, Avengers, Snowfall, Narcos. And he's really good looking. This is a great cast, by the way. This is a great job of casting. It really does probably look like you.
Here's a secret for you. You'll be one of the first to know. The guy, because my dad was my worst enemy, and he became my best friend. But Emilio Rivera from Sons of Anarchy and the Mayans.
Yeah, one of our former co-hosts is actually one of the stars of the Mayans, Vincent Rocco Vargas.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Emilio's going to play my dad.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Dude, I'm going to call Rocco after this. So him and Rocco are best friends in real life, and that's hilarious. That guy's a great actor.
Let me tell you who's going to play my grandpa. This is pretty cool. The guy who's going to play my grandpa is Pepe Serna. And Pepe was, remember Scarface, the guy that got cut up?
Oh, yeah. Paw? Yeah.
So we got some pretty good... We got some pretty good actors, and the thing about it is they are all honored. And I wanted actors that wanted to be in it, not just for the paycheck. Because again, my main focus is, you know, let's keep the American dream alive for other people. You know, no matter where you come from, no matter what color you are, and that's what this story's got to be. You know. So we're excited about it.
For sure. And I'm excited about it. I cannot wait to see the movie. The book is out today, Flamin' Hot, the incredible true story of one of one of the most craziest stories of all time. Mm-hmm. It's one man's rise, essentially, from a janitor all the way to the top. It is possible out there if you believe in yourself. Richard, thanks for your time today. We greatly appreciate having you on Drinking Bros.
Thank you. I had a great time, man. I'm going to take a drink from you guys.
Cheers. For Richard Montanez, D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone.